Coming up next on Functional Moms Podcast.
The average person underreports what they eat by up to 50%, 50%. And I thought, okay, this would make sense based on what I'm seeing in clinic. Because when I first started off as a doc, I would just be like, yeah, you tell me you're eating this. This looks great. What is wrong? You should be losing weight. And then, of course, when I came across this data, I was like, oh, okay, this might explain it. So I put myself to the test, right? As somebody who is very knowledgeable about nutrition. And this was the first time I ever tracked my calories, tracked my macros, anything like that. And I was absolutely overeating. Way more by hundreds of calories than what I thought I was actually consuming. And it was a big eye-opener for me. And I was like, if I'm doing this.
Welcome to Functional Moms Podcast, lifestyle medicine for women over 40. Let's age on our own terms.
This episode is for you if you struggle with weight loss and you have tried everything. Today, we are going to learn how taking a root cause approach may be the answer.
Our guest today is Dr. Katie Zanello, naturopathic doctor who graduated from Bastyr University in Washington and completed her residency at Vita Integrated Health and the Institute for Functional Medicine. Dr. Zanello, thank you so much for coming on our show today. We have so many listeners struggling with weight loss, and we would love to hear today how an integrative approach can help them.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to just give people this amazing information. Absolutely. Such a good starting point. Thank you for asking that. So the approach that we take with integration with functional medicine really is just to take things person by person. Of course, as doctors, we're always looking for bigger patterns, right? I think that's what makes a really good doctor is being able to see those patterns, but more so see those patterns within individualities. So every person, every new patient that I see has their own unique struggles, obstacles, hormone patterns, right, that we need to dig into. So it really is truly about listening to their story, understanding their history, and applying that to the symptoms they have at that time. The second piece there is bringing other people on board, right? So recognizing that as humans, we are so complex and there is so much going on. And so relying on other people in our networks, dietitians, chiropractors, acupuncturists, right? So really making sure that we are using all of our resources to truly help this person in the best way possible.
Oh, so like being surrounded in a community.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
What do you think the three most common patterns are that you see in patients who are struggling to lose weight in particular?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay. Here we go. This is the good stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, the patterns that I typically see, especially when we are talking about women over 40, right? Number one are we start to see changes in our sex hormones, right? So I like to be specific here. This is more than just hormones because we have so many hormones in our body, but particularly once we reach 40, we can absolutely start to be going through perimenopause. Now, we might not actually go through menopause until we're closer to 50, 51, which is the typical average age. However, we can start to see those hormone fluctuations, really increased FSH, you know, starting to decrease in our estrogen, right? That's the typical hormone pattern we see with menopause. That can start as early as 40 years old, right? So that's something that we're really starting to understand and how that affects weight gain, inability to lose weight. And more so than that, we, in the kind of same category here, we start to see a decline in testosterone. A decline in testosterone comes with so many fun symptoms of lower muscle mass, more abdominal weight, inability to lose weight. So that's the first category that I see. The second pattern that I see is burnt out, overworked, exhausted females. And I really feel like this is so under-discussed in our society. So often women come to me and they're like, there must be something wrong with my hormones. And I say, maybe, let's check it out. And it's not just, or we might not even see any dysregularities in hormones. I might actually say hormones are actually very optimal. You are just overwhelmed, tired, and stressed, right? So that's the second thing I see. And then the third most common thing I see is blood sugar dysregulation and all the nutrition that comes around that. There's a lot in this category, includes prediabetes, diabetes, insulin resistance, low muscle mass, you know, poor nutrition. So those are the three main things that I see.
Wow. And so for the hormones, you know, technically it is natural for your hormones to start to decline. So is that something that we can work with, or do we have to supplement? What do we do with that?
Oh, I love this question. Really, really good question. So you're right. Like, absolutely, we know that women are going to go through menopause. That is what we do. And with that comes elevated FSH, lower estrogen, just like we talked about. I struggle myself to even understand, have women always been struggling with menopause symptoms? Like, have we always had such significant hot flashes, such significant weight gain, such significant thyroid dysfunction at this time in our lives? Or are we seeing more and more of these symptoms because of something else? And I think it's probably a little bit of both. What I will say is that a huge piece of what's happening is that when women start to enter this perimenopause, menopause transition, they're already at a deficit in terms of their health because they're overworked, they're stressed, they're balancing, you know, crazy jobs, kids, all the things. Add on all the environmental toxins that we are exposed to now, the pesticides on our food, right? The lack of nutrition that we get, even if we're eating really healthy, we know that our food just doesn't have the nutrients it used to. So when we look at that status and then add menopause on top of it, I think that's a huge reason why women are struggling so much more with menopause. So to answer your question, like, can we just let this happen naturally? Do we need supplementation and treatments? I really leave it up to the patient. So I'll use hot flashes as an example. I tell my patients, I'm like, look, you might get hot flashes, you might not. Let's see how it goes. The second it becomes too much for you, you can't handle it, it's interrupting your sleep, your quality of life, I want to know about it because I can help you. I might have two women who have pretty equal hot flashes, but for one of them, it interrupts their life more and they might want treatment while the other woman doesn't. So I empower my patients to tell me when it becomes too much for them.
Wow. I love that approach.
Yeah. And I've never heard anyone bring it together like that, where you're saying, yes, we're acknowledging these symptoms. I think, you know, there's definitely kind of a revolution with menopause and perimenopause right now, where the education, we can get the information now, but never has our environment been more toxic than ever. And so is that contributing to making the weight gain so, you know, so significant or so much more than maybe people complained about in the past? I don't know. It's a very good question to ask for sure. And so I think then, as the patient, what I'm hearing is that you do a very personalized approach for each person. And that's, of course, the root of functional medicine. But what about, do you see anything with supplementing hormones and help with that weight loss resistance? Because I've heard mixed things on that, that it's not helpful. So I'm curious.
Oh my gosh. Also a fantastic question. So yeah, absolutely. Here is where that integration and that functional medicine piece is really going to come into play, because it absolutely depends on the person and what they're struggling with. So often when women come through my door, they're like, my symptoms are all related to menopause. And sometimes yes, and sometimes no, right? Like, sometimes we just kind of slap the word menopause over it because women feel so horrible. And they're like, I just need something to explain why I feel the way I do. And so that's when we really dig in to see, like, is there other stuff going on that is separate from that menopause transition? Which absolutely, a lot of times there is. Sometimes not. Sometimes it's all connected. So it depends. But can supplements help with weight loss, right? It really, really depends. So if somebody has developed insulin resistance during the menopause transition, which happens, I see women all the time who are like, I've never had insulin resistance, I've never had prediabetes. All of a sudden, I lost my period. A year later, I've got raging diabetes, right? And so that comes with weight gain, of course, often, right? Depending on the person. And so by using supplements to treat the insulin resistance, yes, we could absolutely see weight loss. So it's unique, right? And it depends. But I will say it is not a, you know, one size fits all approach. Like, for example, if you have hot flashes and I give you Siberian rhubarb to help with those hot flashes, that's probably not going to help you lose weight. It'll probably help with your hot flashes, but we need to take a different approach for the weight piece.
What are your thoughts on using medication for weight loss?
Great question. Okay. So I know this is, this is such a controversial topic, but I am very open to women using medications when they are at the appropriate doses and at the appropriate time for weight loss. Let's use the GLP-1 medications, for example, right? These are things like semaglutide, tirzepatide, or Mounjaro. There's so many names for them now. But I have absolutely seen these be really, really beneficial for women for losing weight. And especially those women who are like, my goodness, I am doing all the things, and we go through their diet and we do all the prep work, and they really are moving their bodies. They are eating really, really well, and they just can't lose the weight, or they have a lot of weight to lose, right? And that can be a huge emotional burden for women. And so yes, these absolutely can be very, very, very helpful. And the amazing thing about our medicine is that we get to sit one-on-one with a patient and really explore all aspects of that conversation. Because for some women, we'll talk about it and they'll decide, you know what, that's not for me. I don't want that. I want to take a different approach. And I absolutely respect that. For some women, like I think about the women in my practice who they go through menopause and they get really horrible depression, debilitating depression that then causes them to not want to eat healthy, not move their bodies, and then they gain a significant amount of weight. And for them, these drugs can be life-changing. So yeah, and that's why functional medicine is truly the best, because we get to make that individual approach with patients. So they're great tools.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so what would be your concern though, I guess, with those medicines? Like what, like I know I've heard a lot about you can lose all this weight, but you might be losing muscle. So what would be your approach on that?
Absolutely. Yep. You've got it. So that is one of the biggest concerns. And the reason why that's a concern is because muscle is so valuable. And once you lose it, especially once you are 40, 50, 60 years old, it is really hard to get muscle back because we become more resistant to, like, anabolically resistant, which means it becomes harder to build muscle in later years of our lives. And so a lot of times I get worried that patients are just going to take these medications and then not make the appropriate lifestyle changes that need to come with them. So when we talk about going on these medications, I tell patients, you have to exercise. You have to be lifting weights because we need to preserve that muscle mass. That muscle mass is very important for preventing insulin resistance, diabetes, and osteoporosis. We do not talk enough about osteoporosis in this country until it's too late. Exactly. And so making sure you have muscle mass is valuable for those reasons. And then, of course, anytime we lose significant amounts of weights really quickly, as we can sometimes with these medications, we risk, you know, damage to our gut health, right? And then, of course, to just our emotional burden. Like, there's a lot of emotions that come with taking these medications and losing weight. And that can be unexpected for patients. And so that's a whole nother conversation that we'll have as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask just briefly about gut health too, because I know after 40, it can decline. And I have heard things about too, the medications and how they can impact your gut health overall. Like some people have gut issues when taking them. So what are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so sometimes I will tell patients, because they don't have great gut health, this is not a medication at this time for you until we really improve the gut health. So GLP-1 is a peptide that our bodies actually release naturally. And so even before and while we're on these medications, I really encourage that patients do everything they can to improve their natural production of GLP-1, this peptide. Because eventually when we come off this medication, we're going to want to do everything we can to continue increasing that production of GLP-1. So that's a really important first step. And we can do that through various supplements and then so many dietary interventions that will do that, which is great. And then the second piece is, yes, we can absolutely see diarrhea, constipation, gallstones, what we call gastroparesis, which is where where our GI tract just really slows down, we can see all of those symptoms with these medications. So we want to do what we can to prevent those, but sometimes we just don't know how your body is going to respond. And so it's really important that if you want to start one of these medications, you check in regularly with a hopefully a functional provider or somebody who's a little bit more holistic who can really help you navigate these side effects.
What do you think about intermittent fasting and like longer fast for weight loss resistance?
Yes. Okay. I love this topic. So I feel like all I say is it depends on the patient, but it absolutely does.
Right. That's a functional medicine approach.
Yes.
That's what's great because, you know, you don't feel like you know, everybody fits into this box. You're all taking this medication. And that's the beauty of what you're saying to me. Like it all depends, right? I get it.
Exactly. It's so true. But what I will say is with most of my patients, especially if, you know, we're hitting 40, 50, hormones are a little out of whack, can't lose weight, I always start them, if possible, at a 12-hour overnight fast. That is a great amount of time for our gut health. Absolutely. We need that amount of time for what's called our migrating motor complex, which is the nervous system in our gut that kind of clean sweeps. It gets everything out from the day that we may have missed. So that's the first piece. That 12-hour overnight fast is also going to set people up for success in terms of not eating too close to bedtime. So this is a whole nother topic we could probably have a whole episode on, but a huge reason why a lot of women struggle with weight loss is that emotional nighttime eating. We have all been there, especially moms. You've had a hard day. You put the kids down and you're like, my gosh, I just need a moment for myself here. Let's bring out the chocolate or the ice cream. And so when we talk about it from this 12-hour overnight fast, I also say I want that to start about 2 to 3 hours before bedtime so that not only can your food fully digest before bed, we get that migrating motor complex going, but also your body is not digesting. And so it can focus on everything it needs to while you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. So you can get deeper, more restful sleep, which is so important for weight loss, right?
Yes.
And then, yeah, so that's where I start with the intermittent fasting piece. If a patient, for some people, that's really, really challenging. And so we stay there and that's where we focus. And that's great. For some people, they're like, oh, I feel great. I do this, no problem. Then we do dive into longer fasts. So I'm a big fan of 24 to 48 hours fast. Sometimes we can push it to 3 days depending on the patient. And those are super beneficial. And I absolutely use them. The one caution I'll give people is a lot of times we feel really, really good when we do these fasts because we're losing weight, we're balancing hormones here, we're sleeping better, we're, you know, detoxing, gut health improves. And so then I see patients wanting to do these long fasts really frequently, weekly, you know, every couple of weeks, and we can kind of overdo it. So that's the one piece of advice I'll say is just be cautious because fasting can also increase cortisol levels, which, you know, a lot of us have very high cortisol levels. So we want to be cautious there. And then there's things like Prolon, if you've heard of Prolon before, which is a...
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a fan actually of Prolon. I've had success with that.
Yes, yeah. Me too. And so do we need to buy Prolon to do a fast? Not really. Like you can do it on your own. However, Prolon is really nice because it's giving you all the food and I'm not sponsored by them. They have no idea who I am, but they're a really, really nice tool as well. So I'm a big fan of using Prolon as well.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say personally, you know, I started intermittent fasting maybe 6 years ago, and I think I started to overdo it. Like you said, like I started to feel kind of good, and then your body kind of adjusts and it doesn't work as well as it did to begin with. And like my hair was kind of falling out. I was also doing some keto stuff, and I think it was, you could see it on my body that it wasn't. And then I felt like the weight wasn't coming off anyway. So it was just kind of counterproductive. So I think that's a great piece of advice. And I actually think I probably do better with just doing an occasional longer fast versus like the every day. But of course, doing doing the 12-hour thing. And that's another thing I have to say, too. I noticed when I cut my feeding window off earlier in the evening, my sleep is so much better. Like, I know they say 2 to 3 hours. I would say for me, it's even longer than that. Like, for me to, you know, I'll notice a huge change. I have an Oura Ring. I'll see, like, my deep sleep is higher. My HRV goes higher. So that's definitely something for people to play around with. Because I used to be a person that, like, you know, wouldn't eat all day. And then I'd start, like you said, that mom at night, I'm, you know, diving into the chips and I'm starving while I'm making dinner. So I'm overeating. And so it's just not a good pattern. And that actually brings me to another question we had for you. You had a post on Instagram not long ago, which you said was one of your best posts because it kind of summarized the three different ways people come into your office and their eating patterns and how they might be being counterproductive in their weight loss efforts. So if you could share with that, we'd love to hear about that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I know. It's so funny with social media, you put all this work into posts that you think are really good. And you're like, I hope this resonates with somebody because this is what I see in clinic all day.
Well, it did with us. So yeah.
I'm so glad. Yeah. So this post was something that was just inspired by the common patterns that patients tell me about, right? It's like patients will come to me and I always believe my patients, right? Like I truly, truly do. I know that you are doing the absolute best you can. And it's my guide to kind of refine and help you navigate that. But patients will always say, I swear I'm eating so healthy and I'm not losing weight. And I believe that they truly think they are eating healthy, right?
Right.
However,
thank
right. They think because the truth is like no one teaches us how to do this. Like I had to go through med school to learn this, right? You guys had to go through your coaching academy. And so I don't blame them. I'm like, no one's taught you this. It's okay. So one of the things that I see a lot is people thinking that they are not eating a lot when they in reality are. And that's because they just don't have awareness and a concept of how much they're eating. I came across some data a couple of years ago that said the average person underreports what they eat by up to 50%.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, this would make sense based on what I'm seeing in clinic. Because when I first started off as a doc, I would just be like, yeah, you tell me you're eating this. This looks great. What is wrong? You should be losing weight. And then, of course, when I came across this data, I was like, oh, okay, this might explain it. So I put myself to the test, right? As somebody who is very knowledgeable about nutrition. And this was the first time I ever tracked my calories, tracked my macros, anything like that. And I was absolutely overeating way more by hundreds of calories than what I thought I was actually consuming. And it was a big eye-opener for me. And I was like, if I'm doing this, everybody must be doing this.
Yeah, because you have all the background that the regular people don't have. So
exactly. And so that really changed the way I approached how I practiced and asking people about nutrition. So I always ask people to track their nutrition so that, and I share this data with them so that we both get a true understanding of what they're actually eating. And so in that Instagram post, I give an example of when someone was like, oh, I'm not eating much. And then we actually track what they're eating and it's actually a lot of calories. And so it might not be that you're eating frequently, right? You might say, I'm not even eating breakfast. I'm just eating lunch or dinner, or I am eating 3 meals, but I'm not snacking. But those 3 meals are very, very calorically dense. We truly don't have a good understanding of how calorically dense our foods are until we actually track, see the numbers, and see the serving sizes.
How long do you recommend someone track their numbers, right? Because it's not forever, right?
Nope, not forever. Exactly. So it depends. Like a lot of times I'll have patients say, like I'll say, just do it a couple of days. If they're really hesitant and they don't want to do it, I'm like, give me 2 days. That's it. I just need 2 days. Ideally, if they can track it for about 2 weeks, that's much more helpful, right? Because we get a fuller spectrum of what they're eating. And I will say some of my patients end up really liking it because they learn a lot and it really holds them accountable. And so they will extend it and they'll keep tracking, which I love. And you're right, the goal is not forever. But once you learn this tool, you kind of can't unsee it. You can ignore it, but you can't unsee how much you're eating comparatively to knowing the serving sizes.
Yeah. I think also like some of my clients will report like when they're tracking, then all of a sudden they're about to eat something and they have to track it. They're like, maybe I won't have this, right? That's the one thing. And then the thing when you said like people think like, well, I eat really healthy. And my thing is like, do you think that maybe there's a possibility that there's things that you don't know that maybe if you tracked, I might be able to point out? Do you think that might exist somewhere in our relationship?
I love the way you word that. I'm going to steal that, actually. That's great. Because it's so true. And then going off of that, the other thing I'll tell patients is healthy eating does not equate to eating for weight loss, right? Like, yeah, just because you're eating healthy doesn't mean you're not overeating those healthy foods.
Yes.
Which is hard. That's hard for people to take in.
It is hard. I felt like when I kind of went down the paleo path and I was eating, you know, well, I'm making almond flour muffins, so that's healthy. But yes, it is calorically dense. And so you can't have too many of them. So it's true. You kind of get confused there. And I think that's a great explanation for people that it's not one and the same.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And so, you know, speaking of like weight resistance, how does stress plays a role in weight resistance? Sleep plays a role in weight resistance?
Oh, yes. I love this topic. So yeah. And like I said, when we first started talking at the beginning of our episode, was this stress emotional piece is one of the patterns that I see. So there's a couple of different factors at play here. Number one, with stress, we can't ignore our hormones, right? Of course, that's a huge piece of it. So many of us have elevated cortisol levels, right? There are a lot of people who don't, but there are definitely a lot of people who do. And we absolutely know that elevated cortisol levels are going to lead to more weight retention and more insulin resistance. Like, we see that in the literature. So we know that. So that's the first piece. If you have the opportunity to work with a provider to get those levels checked, because it's not just total cortisol, it's also the pattern of your cortisol throughout the day. That's something we like to look at with salivary testing, for example. And then we can...
How do you test that?
Yeah, we test it in saliva, actually. So that's one of the most accurate, stable ways to test cortisol. So I use a company that sends patients a kit at home, and then they just take salivary samples, six different samples throughout the day at different time points.
Oh.
Because yeah, cortisol, I mean, yes, we can look at cortisol in the blood. We can get like a total cortisol, but it doesn't give us enough information because we really want to see that pattern of cortisol throughout the day. Because you might be waking up with low cortisol and going to bed with high cortisol, or your cortisol might peak, you know, during the day. And so there's a lot of patterns that we can see. So we need to understand these patterns before we actually treat somebody or to treat them effectively, right? That's the first piece from the stress response. The second piece with sleep plays into this a little bit. If you have elevated cortisol levels in the evening, you're not sleeping, right? Mm-hmm. This is that tired and wired of like, I was tired 3 hours ago, but now I'm not. And my brain is racing and I can't fall asleep. Right. And so then you're staying up.
That's the worst.
That is. Yeah.
It really is. So then you're staying up late, you're snacking more, you're kind of perpetuating the cycle, right? And then you wake up the next day and you have to have a lot of caffeine. So that's kind of one area. But then the second aspect has to do with our habits related to stress. So, you know, so many women, right? We're so stressed. We're dealing with so much. Our mental load is so high. And so that really causes us to go for the fast foods, to go for the caffeine, to go for the sugar. And, you know, I don't blame any of my patients who do this. I'm like, of course.
And even like the wine at night, like try to wind down, that can be such a pattern, I feel like, that you rely on.
100%. I see it all the time. Exactly. So yeah, when it comes to the stress and the sleep portion, it's, you know, the hormone piece, but then it's also our habit piece.
Yeah.
And so going back to our original, when you talked about the three patterns that you see, we didn't dive totally into the second person that it's really, you're kind of saying it's the environment that's causing their issues versus, you know, something internally. So what kind of approach do you take with that patient?
Exactly. And so this, like that second person is somebody who might be like not eating at all during the day. And then they come home and they're like, oh, I haven't eaten today. Let me eat all this food. food. So you think you're under eating, but you can absolutely overeat for a full day's worth of calories in just those couple of hours. And so what we see, this is your typical mom, right? Gets up, gets the kids going, grabs the coffee, probably putting sugar and cream in there, right? And then just getting out the door, getting the kids to school, getting to work, diving into work until lunchtime, realizes it's lunchtime, is like, oh gosh, I don't have time, grabs maybe trail mix or just something small, whatever they can find, and then keeps working. And then all of a sudden it's 5 o'clock, got to get home, pick up the kids. And then you're like, wow, I'm starving because I haven't eaten all day. And so then you snack as you're making dinner. Those snacks add up very, very quickly in calories because they're usually processed, calorically dense foods. And then you have this dinner. It's usually carbohydrates, right? If we're kind of talking about the standard American diet here. And then, of course, you get the kids to bed and then you're like, all right, give me the wine, the ice cream, the chocolate, right? So it's a typical pattern I see really often. And so what we talk about is fueling your body for success, right? And what that looks like. And so that looks like avoiding caffeine on an empty stomach is the first thing that we really want to do, especially if we're trying to regulate sleep and cortisol patterns. And so I say, and again, like, I know that you guys stress the importance of simplicity, and as do I with my patients, because this poor busy mom, like, she needs simple, right?
Yeah.
And so I say, choose something really easy and simple for breakfast. Like, I don't go into a full conversation of hitting those 30 grams of protein when you wake up, because she's not doing any protein right now. So like, let's start with a hard-boiled egg, right? Let's start with a really quick protein shake. Have that with your coffee. And then I say, maybe we're not at the stage where we can quite mentally pack a lunch yet. We'll get there. But what can you keep in the office that is going to be a better option, right? Is it a protein shake? Is it, you know, a bag of almonds without the chocolate? Like, you know, something like that. We brainstorm what she likes. So that way, yeah, we might look at that and say, it's not perfect, but it's absolutely better than where she was. And then we talk about, you know, a snack around 2, 3 p.m. so that you're not ravenous when you come home and you're not digging into the cabinets looking for whatever you can while you're cooking dinner. You feel satiated from that snack. And so you're able to think and breathe and give yourself a moment to say, okay, what can I make that's quick and healthy? And we brainstorm those ideas too, like absolutely giving my patients a list of really simple, easy, healthy dinner options is key. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah.
That is so great. First, something that Kristen like put together for us was like, this is the perfect woman to ask. The functional moms want to know, how are you functioning? That's one thing. And then the other thing that you said that is so key that I think is such a huge takeaway is when you said, it's not perfect, but you know, maybe you're not where you want to be, but you're not where you were. So you're taking small wins. And this is the thing. And it's like, it's not, again, this is the perfect example of it's not an all or nothing mindset. It's the small wins. It's imperfect action.
Yeah, exactly. And you're starting where she's at too, because you have to meet the person where they're at, and we have to meet ourselves where we're at and acknowledge, like, you know, what kind of season we're in as far as our family commitments. So many of us have aging parents. That is such a stressor.
Right. And that's what you say, Katie, when you say, you know, it depends on the person. Right. It depends, because you got to look at their life, their lifestyle, you know, how are they currently functioning? How do they want to function? And what are the small steps that we get from where we are to where we want to be? Because there's a whole area in between that has to be lived. You don't want to be here, but you're not going to get here without doing this in between thing.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I couldn't have said it better. You guys hit the nail on the head there. Like, I need my patients to listen to this, because I swear they get so tired of me saying it is small, consistent wins over perfection. And yeah, it's cliche, but it's cliche because it's true, right?
Like, absolutely.
These things matter. So thank you so much.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, it's such the good news.
It's a sigh of relief. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Like, we don't have to be perfect.
Yeah. When you look at it that way, I know. I know.
Yeah.
So we do have to ask you about protein, because that has been the message for us women over 40. We are supposed to be consuming about 30 grams per meal. Right. But like, where does she, I mean, I know you're saying we got to start where we're at, right? So.
Right. Well, that's what she was saying. She said before the woman that's not doing anything at all, right? Maybe she's eating a egg. Maybe she's having a smoothie, right? And she's not going to hit those 30 grams of protein per meal or the first meal of the day if she's just, you know, like for the half her life, she was already just having a cup of coffee.
Exactly. Yes. I guess I'm more asking, what about the person that's on the journey? Like, I would put myself in that category. Like, I've really been more conscious of my protein. I'm trying to get about 30 grams per meal, but I'm going to throw out that I have gut health issues. A lot of people that come to functional medicine and get there because they had gut issues. And I find it a bit hard to digest the protein. That it's not the greatest and that it's difficult to get your fiber intake high enough. Like that's another challenge that I personally am experiencing.
Okay, such great questions. Yes, let's dive in here. So you're right. Like at the end of the day, we're going to start with where we can. And so many women come to me of like, oh, I heard on social media that I should be getting 30 grams. So I went from like 5 grams to 30 grams. And now I cannot have a bowel movement or my stomach hurts, right? And so I'm like, okay, yep, let's pump the brakes here a little bit. So what I'll say is absolutely, once we reach, you know, 40-ish years old, we really want to aim for that 30-ish grams of protein per meal, particularly with an emphasis on the first meal of the day and then your meal after your workout, right? If you have like a strength training workout. And that's because, like I mentioned earlier, we become more anabolically resistant with age, particularly when we go through menopause. So important there to focus on the protein. But you're right. How do we get to that point where it actually feels good and we see the benefits of that protein intake? And so number one, track. See where you currently are. And I know that tracking can feel overwhelming for a lot of women. So I say just start with like the most calorically dense food. So like your protein, right? Your eggs, your protein shake, your meats. Start with those to get a good idea of how much protein you are getting. And so if you're getting 15 grams at breakfast, what can we do to get to 20 grams? And then after a couple of months, 25 and then 30, right? To help mitigate those gut symptoms, absolutely start slow. Don't just go from 5 to 30 overnight. You will not feel good. The second thing is taking digestive enzymes can be super helpful here, especially when we are making that transition. Sometimes we need a little bit of hydrochloric or betaine hydrochloric acid in there, and digestive enzymes, again, you know, those are all over the counter, so anybody can go get these, but I do recommend working with a provider because you can overdo the hydrochloric acid, which we don't want to do, but that can be really, really helpful. And then, of course, a lot of my patients, that's sometimes where we'll find out that they do have SIBO or leaky gut, is we try to increase protein even slowly and they can't handle it. They have a lot of bloating, a lot of stomach aches, a lot of postprandial fullness or feeling really full after a meal, in which case we might need to do some follow-up testing to see what's going on there and then treat that SIBO or leaky gut or whatever is going on. So the protein is really, really important because, like we mentioned, we want to keep muscle mass on because once you turn 40, if you are not doing anything, you are losing muscle mass. And that's going to put you more at risk for osteoporosis, more at risk for diabetes, more at risk for weight gain, inability to lose weight. And so if you can't work out, eating that protein is going to be really helpful. However, we also want to pair that with exercise to help encourage that muscle mass growth, or at least that prevention of decline in the muscle mass.
And what kind of exercise program do you recommend for weight loss for this woman?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Absolutely. So like a broken record, the first thing I'll say is depends on where you currently are. A lot of my patients come to me not exercising very much. And so I say, okay, our goal is to not be sedentary, right? So I need you getting at least 5,000 to 6,000 steps per day. Like that's often our first goal. And that is a huge problem in America. Let's talk about this for a second, is being sedentary. Mm-hmm. And I think a huge part of it is more people are working from home since COVID, but I see it far too often of just not even getting enough steps in. So that's your first job, is to try and get enough steps in. I have a feeling most of the women listening to this podcast are probably doing that. So then your next step is to absolutely bring in some weight training. And I know that if you have not lifted weights before, or it's been a long time, this can feel so intimidating and overwhelming, but you want to start somewhere. And that could be spending a little bit of money just to hire a trainer for a couple of sessions, doing a group class once per week, or even doing like the Peloton, the Beachbody apps, right, at home in the comfort of your home, just to kind of get started. Super, super important. The research shows that to just maintain your muscle mass, especially as we go through menopause, 2 sessions a week, 20 to 30 minutes, that's all it takes. And when I break that down for patients, it feels much more doable. Like all of a sudden they think, I can 20 minutes 2 times per week, like I could do that. I can make that happen. If we want to get a little fancier here, we absolutely want to add in some HIIT training, some balance and flexibility training for the osteoporosis prevention. But then plyometrics are another fantastic way to stimulate that muscle growth and to help with the weight loss piece. You know, I kind of hate to use the term revving up or boosting our metabolism, but you know, we all know that we feel better from a metabolic perspective when we are doing those higher intensity workouts. So adding those in, if you can.
Mm-hmm. And then I want to just make sure we go back to my fiber question too, because
fiber, yes.
I know that's like a tricky thing. It's, you know, it can be tough to get that in, especially when you're focusing on protein.
Exactly. So this is the really interesting piece, is like for women who feel like they actually can't eat enough food, and then I show them what that 25 to 30 grams of fiber looks like, that 30 times 3 grams of protein, what that looks like. And they're like, how in the world am I going to eat all this food? And then it becomes this kind of fun little mind game where it's like, you get to eat all this food. Like, how cool is that, right? Like, we all want to eat more food, because the messaging that so many women have heard their whole lives is eat less, eat less, eat less to lose weight. Mm-hmm. And that is not the case when you are focusing on fiber and protein. And so the best way to do it is to look at, okay, we ideally would love for people to get about 25 grams of fiber in per day. 25 to 30 would be awesome. So then we divide that up by your meal. So typically that's 1 snack, 3 meals, or however you kind of space out your food. And so that's a really nice way to then look at, okay, I'm looking at, you know, 5-10 grams of fiber per meal. And so then we ask ourselves, well, what foods have fiber in them? And it's your whole foods, your basic foods, your nuts, your seeds, your legumes, right? Your chickpeas, your beans. I know we're on the East Coast here. And so we are in that starchy vegetable season of squashes, which is a lovely way to get fiber in, and then all your plants. And so when you are creating a meal plan that is focused around a meal that's, you know, 5-10 grams of fiber with 30 grams of protein, you have to have a healthy meal, right? It has to be balanced. There's no more room for the processed foods and for the sugars. And so that's where I tell people to start. But again, just like the protein with the fiber, if you're only getting 3-5 grams of fiber in your whole day, please don't just jump up to 25 grams. Your digestive system will not be happy. So start slowly. And again, we might need to bring on some digestive enzymes, because a lot of people just have under-functioning guts because of what they've been eating. And so bringing on some GI support is going to be really, really helpful in this case.
Absolutely. That's really helpful. And you're right. It cuts out the space for all the processed stuff when you have to focus on all these whole real foods. It makes a big difference. So that's really helpful.
Well, just being mindful of our time today, Dr. Dinello, what are 2 simple things that we can do today to get to the root cause of weight loss resistance?
Oh my goodness. Yes. Okay. So the first one is, I really recommend that patients be honest with themselves. sit down, ask yourself, why am I truly not losing weight? A lot of times we know the answer, right? Like the more I get to know a patient, the more we develop a really strong therapeutic relationship, that trust, right? They trust me. I trust them. They can be more vulnerable with me. They can tell me more about what's absolutely going on in their lives. 9 times out of 10, they know why they're not losing weight, right? And so I really encourage you, sit down, quiet your mind, and be honest, right? Are you actually doing everything you can to lose weight? Or are you just thinking about doing all the things to lose weight, but not actually implementing them? So that's the first thing. Now, of course, there's always going to be exceptions to that. Like, still meet with your provider, get hormone levels checked, right? All that matters. But really ask yourself, am I doing everything lifestyle-wise for that weight loss piece? The second thing is choose, in addition to what you're doing with your provider, I want you to choose 3 to 5 healthy habits that you can do most days. So that would be like drinking a certain amount of water, hitting your step goal, eating a certain number of servings of vegetables per week, right? Or like 3 servings of vegetables per day, right? Little things like that, you know, X amount of sleep, little small behaviors like that. And I want you to aim to do 1 to 2 of those every day. And that is a really approachable way for patients to push their health in a positive direction, with it being simple and not feeling overwhelming. Some days you might hit all 5 of those goals and you are going to feel like a superhero, and that is awesome. And that's like a pat on the back, I did it. But for the majority of the days, you're only going to be able to do 1 to 2 of those. And like we said before, that is that consistency, not right, perfection. And so you can end your day saying, yeah, I wasn't perfect, but I did a couple of things that pushed my health in a positive direction today. And you just keep doing that over and over and over again.
I love that. That makes it so much more manageable, how you break down everything into the steps. That's what we love, the small wins. That's great. Thank you so much for that. I just want to tell everybody, you can connect with Dr. Dinello on Instagram. Her handle is @katie.dinello. She has generously created an added sugar detox guide for our listeners. And we are going to have that linked in the show notes for people to download. And if you want to just tell us a little bit about that, the sugar that's to help people kind of relabels and eliminate added sugars.
Yeah, exactly. So this kind of was born just because I do this a lot. Like I, you know, usually a couple times per year, I just take inventory of what I'm eating and I just make an extra effort to really avoid added sugars. I usually do it leading up to my birthday, just so I can feel really good for my birthday. And so I finally was like, I need to put all this in writing and make a guide on this. So the guide, it's not technical. It's pretty easy to understand. It's not very medical. So don't feel intimidated by that. And it's just 7 days of removing added sugars, not natural sugars. So you can have your fruits, have your starchy vegetables, which have natural sugars in them, but it really helps you go through those nutrition labels so you can understand what added sugars are, what they might be disguised as, other names, things like that. And it's just a tool to empower yourself to, yeah, remove those added sugars and see how much better you could feel by doing that.
That is great. And I love how you do it before your birthday, giving yourself the gift of health. You can't get better than that. I love it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just want to say, Katie is currently pregnant, right? How many months are you pregnant right now?
Yeah, we are 35 weeks.
Yes. Yeah. So we just want to really bless you with a wonderful birth and your son having a sibling.
Very exciting.
Can't wait to find out what you're having.
Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, curing, treating, or preventing any disease. We are functional medicine certified health coaches and not licensed medical professionals. The opinions and advice of guests are their own and also not considered to be medical advice. Always consult with a healthcare professional when making any healthy lifestyle changes. We would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment or review. Email us at info@functionalmoms.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button.